Oregon hockey fans, are you ready to brave the wild with me, your host, Paladino Joey, or Joey Owygen? Brave the Wild is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, PodMN, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Audible, Double Twist, and even Podbean's working now. Podbean did connect. It took like a month or two. Sometimes those RSS feeds just kind of do their thing. They dance around, and sometimes they work right away, sometimes they don't, but same with trade deadlines. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Joining me today, so it's going to be an unconventional show. It's not going to be babbling on and on and on about, game previews and reviews and such. Derek Feltke jumps on board at Creature and Assist. The legend himself joins the Brave the Wild show. Welcome on board.
Well, thanks for having me. I've never been called a legend before, so already I'm feeling like there's a lot of pressure for me to bring it. Otherwise, I'll lose that status, and I don't know. No one wants to not be called a legend anymore if you've been called it once.
Yeah, look what I've done. Yeah, like you're the Marc-Andre Fleury, right?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a nice addition to the show. Look what I've done. I've already let the cat out of the bag. Like, who could we possibly be talking about today? I don't know.
Well, it's kind of a big deal, I guess, as they'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is. The main topic today, of course, will be the trade deadline, and we're going to go down memory lane a bit with trade deadline signings, trades, stuff like that. A lot of disappointing ones, of course. Stuff like that. Kemp Talbot going back to being a backup again, but could be a damn good one. The Jack McBain situation. Oh, goody. Kakanen's no longer with the Wild. This and that. So, and of course, it'll be a very, very, very strong fan interaction segment. I'm still debating on the fly here if I should make it a one-segment, just a one-segment palooza, or a two-segment deal where we kind of talk a little bit and then jump into fan interaction, but I'm leaning towards a one-segment deal. We'll see. So, first and foremost, a lot of us were kind of, some of us were on the fence a little bit about the, acquiring Marc-Andre Fleury, partially because, not because he's a great player, or isn't a great player, but because there's always that fear he might falter in the postseason. There's always, he'll be good for a round or two, maybe get all the way to the conference final, and then all of a sudden he's not the same. There was always that fear. But then it happens, and then it's like, oh my God, Marc-Andre Fleury's on the Wild, and it seems like that just kind of goes under the wayside for a little bit. So how do you feel about the acquisition of our new goaltender?
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, when you think about Marc-Andre Fleury, it's not as much about disagreement about whether he still has the ability. I mean, literally, he is a season removed from being a Vezina winner.
Mm-hmm.
As the league's best goalie. I think the big thing was, okay, well, how much is that going to cost?
Yeah.
What's the ask going to be going back? And quite honestly, I don't think too many of us thought that the cost was going to seem as reasonable as it ended up being. And not only that, you know, as some people wanted to say with the trade deadline that the Wild are, quote-unquote, pushing all in, well, to me it would be more pushing all in on Marc-Andre Fleury if the Wild had done like a, you know, a player-for-player swap where Talbot goes to Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and Fleury ends up here, because then, yeah, it would be all on Marc-Andre Fleury's shoulders to do it. But instead, we end up with both, we have both of them. And to me, that gives you the ability to not put it all on Marc-Andre Fleury's shoulders. And maybe you end up getting the best out of both, because statistics would indicate that, you know, Cam Talbot at, you know, mind you, 34 years old to you and I doesn't seem that old,
yep.
But in NHL terms it is.
Yeah.
It does say that he was maybe getting started. He was playing too much. And
yeah.
So now you don't have that stress where he has to be your ace each night. You can go to Marc-Andre Fleury and maybe get the best out of both. And not only that, you can also, you know, change your look against teams too, especially, you know, albeit a rotation is maybe a little more unconventional in a playoff series. We at least have a second option where we feel confident, and that's, let's face it, that's a huge part of it, not just for the player between the pipes, but also to the team in front of it. Because if they don't have confidence in that guy, then it's much more difficult for them to do their job when they fear that any shot on goal is going to maybe find the back of the net.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I'm
just going to say that I just think that there's a lot to be said for that, you know, what that confidence does for the way the team plays in front, because then they're not maybe so worried that, you know, any shot is, you know, going to kill you.
Yeah, I mean, I like that take because, of course, the big thing I kept ranting about over the course of time was overusing Talbot. It was like the last 2 years I kept, mm-hmm. it was podcast after podcast, like, please don't do this again. You know, like Nicklas Backstrom broke down, Devin Dubnyk broke down, you know, other goalies on other teams broke down, obviously. Seemed like it was a huge trend here. So to cut back on overusing Talbot, and then, like you said, the best of both worlds, you just never know. I mean, the last time we had two goalies platooning, which may or may not be the case here, we wound up in a conference final situation and unfortunately ran into an ultra-hot goalie. But maybe we'll have the ultra-hot one this time.
Well, you at least hope so. I mean, truth be told, Kapokakinen was at his best when he understood that he was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when Talbot went down, that's when he seemed to play his best, because he didn't worry that someone else was going to take the crease back.
Mm-hmm.
When he had that other person over their shoulder, he seemed to be much more inconsistent. And, you know, that I think may have pushed into the – that may have been a big reason why Bill Guerin and the Wild as an organization decided to continue to push to make that move, because I think, to me, it was kind of more of a reflection of what they thought about Kakinen, maybe even more than Talbot, possibly, that they just didn't have faith that if things had to go where they had to put Kakinen out there, whether he would be able to play it up at that level that was needed. And, you know, I think they liked him, but, you know, again, when he seemed to have that other person there, he just didn't seem to be as good as when, you know, there was an injury and suddenly he knew he wasn't going to be, I guess, quickly pulled or anything like that. Not that, like I said, I don't think he was as mentally fragile as, like, a Kemper who always seemed like a house of cards, where he'd give up one bad goal and then he gives up four bad goals.
Yeah, you're dead.
He just seemed to just fall apart. But at the same time, he also couldn't seem to run with it when he had another competent player also on the, you know, as a goaltending option for whatever reason.
Yeah, for sure. And at the end of the day, I'm gonna miss Kakinen, and like you said, he was really good when he was in the situation where he knew he was the guy. You know, Talbot's out for three weeks or something, and then Kakinen had some historic little runs there. What was it, like 9 wins in a row, something like that?
Yep.
That was awesome.
Yep.
That was fun. I'm gonna miss him because, you know, I'm kind of a prospect nerd, maybe not as much as other people, but I'm up there enough because there was always that hope. Who's the next Gabrick? Who's the next, you know, Ken Dryden or whatever in the system? And then I still remember going all the way back to 14. I guess it isn't even that long ago, but it's kind of long ago. The fourth round, we take Kapokakinen, interesting pick, and I just followed him all the time. So it's kind of like losing a friend, you know?
Well, I mean, there's something to be said for that. Like, you know, I mentioned Darcy Kemper before. I mean, like Darcy Kemper, it's a player you drafted. It's a player...
Yep.
The organization spent time developing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't always rainbows and sunshine while they did it. I mean, there were some struggles at times. Although I would say with Kakinen, at least, there also weren't the health-related struggles, where Kemper always seemed a bit fragile, especially when the going got tough.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed to be when he would suffer some kind of injury no one could define. And then he was hurt for a couple weeks. whereas Kokkonen always seemed to be fairly durable. But still, I mean, it wasn't all perfection, yet he showed a lot of promise. I mean, being former American Hockey League Goalie of the Year in a season that, you know, unfortunately for Iowa fans is a huge what if, like, what could we have been had COVID not happened? I feel bad for that fan base because it looks like they might be robbed of their playoffs because of really the pandemic 2 years in a row.
Yeah, it sucks. They had a ton of potential that year too, especially. Oh, that was fun. And I'm definitely going to miss him in a big way. And obviously Kemper, like you said, mental fragility and physically, basically. Mm-hmm. What am I trying to say? Fragile mentally and physically, pardon me. Losing my mind already, and maybe it's the little bit of coffee I've had so far. off the mic conversation. other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, no, I'm kidding. The acquisition with Kaapo Kähkönen was obviously Kähkönen to the San Jose Sharks. So once again, a goalie winds up with the San Jose Sharks or some kind of trade with the Sharks. It doesn't matter who the GM is. Somebody's going to the Sharks at some point.
Yeah, we're kind of a Sharks pipeline.
Yeah, yep, Sharks, and then the Penguins for a bit now, and then obviously the Predators was like a year and a half. We were the Minnesota Predators.
And Sabres, too. A lot of Sabres.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, that went on forever during the Fletcher era. Oh, my God, that went on. And most of them were losses, right?
Some of them, yeah.
Some and most. No, yeah. Kind of somewhere in the middle. But, yeah, Jacob Middleton, big, big bruising defenseman. At first, I was like, oh, we just gave Kähkönen away. And then it's like, no, we didn't. What am I talking about? I was the one bitching and moaning about our back end, just like most other people, about getting a big bruising defenseman. And here he is, Jacob Middleton.
Yeah, really kind of something. He brings something that the rest of the defensive core doesn't, at least overall. They're not a group that's built on size and strength. It's a group built on finesse and the ability to like transition the puck from offense to defense quickly. They're more of, as they'd say, puck mover types. And Middleton brings in a more size. And you know, like I pointed out when I did my trade kind of overview, even as of right now, he would have the most hits defenseman. Our top hitter on our defense, our blue line is Dmitry Kulikov with 70, and Middleton has 89. Now, mind you, as Russo has complained many times, as subjective as shots sometimes are recorded by different arenas, so are hits. I mean, there's arenas where, you know, you have to legit make physical contact with a person and like intentionally to get a hit. Other arenas, it's like, did you skate by the guy? That's a hit. You know, you know, that it's hard to say. I guess he was, I believe if I remember correctly, when I did my statistics, he was sixth on the Sharks in hits, as a team, but he was their top, at least for the Wild, he would be the top hitting blue liner. So at least you hope that he's a person that's going to bring a physical presence, keep the crease clear, which I think that's been kind of an issue, especially during the Wild swoon, you know, where guys were allowed to spend way too much time in those high traffic areas, because I think part of it is, I mean, hitting's there's two parts to it. One is your want to physically hit somebody, and two is your physical ability to actually do it. And I don't think we have necessarily a lot of want to, because that's not how our guys are wired. And I also think that the physical part, because of the fact that, again, we've valued finesse defensemen mostly, a lot of our guys are usually on the underside. So, you know, our Jared Spurgeon, he's given you all he's got at his size. But, I mean, if he's standing next to a 6'3 forward, there's a lot of physics that are not in his favor.
Mm-hmm. Big time. You know? Yep.
And that's just the reality of it. So hopefully he can help balance it out. And and he has some experience playing with more, shall we say, offensively driven defensemen. He played on a pairing with Brent Burns, but most notably played on a pairing with Erik Karlsson, whose defense is kind of an optional thing for Erik Karlsson. So he's used to being playing against with a mobile, offensively creative partner. Not that he's contributing offensively, but you could say covering up the defensive parts. And he was a +3 on a team that's full of minus players. That in itself is kind of intriguing because it tells you that he was taking care of his end of the ice on a team that typically doesn't. So to me, that's an impressive statistic, even though a lot of people malign plus minus. When it's a team full of minuses and he's one of the few pluses, that kind of tells you something.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and he's going to play that perfect role where it's the whole balancing things out, the smaller offensive finesse guy, the big physical defensive-minded guy. So that's cool then, because it obviously it's a perfect balance, perfect fit for the Minnesota Wild in a lot of ways. I wanted a Ian Cole type. Yep. Go ahead.
He's 26 years old.
Yep.
He makes $725,000 a year right now. So from a money standpoint, I know earlier in your last podcast you, and also on Twitter, you had talked about, the possible bring back of like a Carson Soucy. Well, and as and not that I was, not that I'm trying to like one up you or whatever, but
No.
I mentioned that, my issue with where Carson Soucy now is that he's, his salary is now just a shade under $3 million.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and for a team and that's where money is tight, $3 million for that person is kind of out of their, they can't afford that.
Yep.
Especially if they want to go after, protect other priorities, for the team. So keeping cheap players is important, and Jacob Middleton is a cheap player. While his contract, he'll be an RFA at the end of the season. There's, I think if they like how he plays, I think there's a pretty good chance that they would take steps to keep him around, especially if he brings that element that they hope, which is that physical presence. Which even in our system, looking at prospects, Kalen Addison isn't that guy.
Yeah, he's tiny, yeah.
I realize that, you have maybe a little bit bigger guys than like a Damon Hunt. Ryan O'Rourke's a little bit, I mean, he's a little smaller than Middleton, but neither of those guys are tanks either. And, they still have growing up to do. And Middleton's already ready to go. So to me, it makes a lot of sense if you could, sign him at a mild increase. I mean, he has 53 games, so I mean, how much can he? I mean, I should say that with Kirill Kaprizov asking for $9 million. I don't think he's gonna ask for $9 million after 53 games. But I think you could maybe keep him around and have an affordable thing. And again, to me, then the only buyer's remorse you'd have is maybe we shouldn't have re-signed or extended John Merrill so soon.
Yeah, I'm having a
That
little,
might be my, that might
yeah.
be where the buyer's remorse comes into play.
Yep, I was about to use that exact term. Ooh, I'm
But,
glad it's not too
they can
much.
always trade them.
Yeah, that might be the only way. Yeah, because obviously it's like convenient. Right after he signed the extension, his play dropped. Like, of course, right? Shocking. And then Kulikov. I'm not using the H this time. I've had a really bad habit of that. Yeah, he's at over 2 million, and he's still here next year. So. Yeah, it's definitely an issue, the salary cap with defensemen, and of course you have the big shots that all make a fortune. So, no, good point, definitely. And Soucy, I remember every time I kept talking about it, and I'd always have that pit in my throat, like, yeah, he is making too much, isn't he? So that's just how that goes. With that said, we're ready to jump into, well, I guess there's a couple other minor trades, obviously. Mr. DeLorean, I guess, dare I call him? No, DeLaurier, but
DeLaurier, yep.
yeah, and I like to joke about DeLorean. So he should have worn number 88 or something. No, that would have been funny.
He plays a little too rough a game to be a DeLorean.
Yeah, he's more like one of those big 70s tanks or something, right?
I would say more like a demolition derby car out there.
Yeah, those big, or like a monster truck. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of
Yeah.
like that. Yeah, he definitely was throwing his weight around right away. He did not waste any time with that, and you could tell the crowd really enjoyed it. Every time he made a big hit on somebody, one, the boards really kind of thundered in a way that you don't hear very often, but you
The
could tell the
earthquake,
crowd
huh?
was feeding off that the whole game. And you could tell he was feeding off of it. You saw the smile on his face after he put somebody, stapled them to the boards pretty well. He was having fun out there. And I don't know. I heard his interview on Straight from the Source. I actually just listened to it before the podcast.
Yeah, wasn't that
And
cool? Yeah.
yeah, I thought he was really grounded. Doesn't seem to have any kind of inflated view of himself whatsoever. He seems to be very, I thought he had a really good perspective of what he is and what he's about, and he seemed to be pretty, how do I want to put it? He articulated his thoughts really well in terms of, what this means. Like, okay, this could be just me as a rental for the rest of this season. Who knows, maybe it could go longer, but right now the focus is about the here and now. And I don't know, like I said, he seems to understand perfectly what he's here for. There's no doubt about it. And he seems to be happy to be here, which that's good too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Awesome personality in the interview, and he was
Yeah.
poking fun at himself when they talked about his skill or something. He's like, "What skill?" So I got a
Yeah.
kick out of that, and gotta love the French Canadian accent, bringing a little bit of that in here with him, and of course Marc-Andre Fleury, the big smile from both of them. They're the kind of guys you win a Stanley Cup. They're the kind of guys you remember, and especially if you're a teammate of theirs. I mean, they're gonna remember them forever if they go on and win a cup. It's going to be a beautiful thing if that happens. Obviously,
Yeah,
the
and
yeah.
sorry.
I
I
was
was
going to
just
say,
saying that.
obviously, the odds of that are slim, but yeah, but maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if he can spell some of the physical workload, like he the big thing with him, kind of going back to what I mentioned with Middleton, is his hits.
Yeah, yep.
I think he was sixth in the league in hits
Whoa.
with 216 hits, which
Oh.
the most on the Wild is Marcus Foligno at 170. So he
Not
hits a
bad.
lot, and he understands perfectly that he's kind of there so that Marcus Foligno doesn't have to fight. Not that that's what it's all about, because I mean he can kill penalties, which again that can also maybe help ease some of the workload on Marcus Foligno if they are going to be used so much in kind of a shutdown role, which that takes a lot of energy out of people, especially for bigger guys. I think that helps Foligno do his job at a bet at a what do you want to say with more pace and more energy, because he's not having to try to do more than what he's capable of. And I think Delorier completely understands that. He knows that he's there to kind of supplement that if need be, and he can kill some penalties. And like I said, I think it's a good fit on a lot of levels, and the fact that those two are also good friends, I think
Yeah, yep.
is a bonus. I mean, it's not like it's two people that are going to look at each other and see each other as like competing for the same role in the team. They know that their roles are different. That there's some similarities to them, but that they're not trying, like, Deloria is not trying to take Marcus Foligno's spot on the lineup. And Marcus Foligno isn't worried that Nick Deloria is going to take his spot. They have different roles. I mean, they might have similar qualities to their game, but they have a different role in terms of, I mean, he recognizes completely, like you mentioned, his self-deprecating humor, but he was
Yeah,
also serious in the fact that he said he wished that he was as good as hockey as Marcus is, that Marcus is more skilled. And
Yep.
And to me, that's good to hear. You know, not too many times athletes will say they're not as good as somebody else unless it's like abundantly obvious, like they're a superstar player. But, you know, like I said, I think this person understands who he is as a person and why the team brought him here. And sorry, I just think that, it, like you said, it's refreshing to hear somebody that seems to, you know, understand his place so well already.
Yep, it's awesome to have him, and it balances out the roster. And it's obviously takes some of that stand up for your teammates pressure off of Marcus Foligno. And of course, again, both of these guys coming in, talk is, and I agree with it, is that this really prepares the Wild for the postseason for all the situations that can pop up. Obviously, you got to be big and physical going into the playoffs. These trades, I think a lot of these decisions were made possibly during games against Calgary and such, where they just manhandled us. So, and you can't get in a track meet with the Colorado Avalanche, so you got to kind of be more physical with them to get them off their game, which is a lot what the 03 Wild did. The 14 Wild played a little bit of mind games with them, I would say, and overachieved, and that was beautiful. The Wild are built for the postseason, and the good news is we're not just too big and slow like we were. We made that mistake in 07, I think, when we
08.
Oh, 08, yeah. Yep, because we lost to the Ducks after they beat us up.
Yep.
Then we played the Colorado Avalanche, who were inferior to the Wild that year, but we were just too slow, and they beat us.
I think like you were mentioning, like being whether big and slow and stuff like that, but another thing that I noticed in that game against Vegas, which, by the way, it was awesome watching us shut out Vegas.
Isn't that cool?
was the fact that you noticed in that game. Now, mind you, Vegas was missing a lot of their star players. I don't think you can say that it was a full Vegas team. Not even close.
Yeah,
but
they missed everybody.
The one thing you did notice, though, was with Vegas' lower line players, especially guys like, you know, Carrier, Kolesar, they weren't taking any extra liberties with the Wild. You know, they weren't trying to sit there and target Kaprizov and try to, you know, beat up Zuccarello or something like that after the whistle. Like in the past where they did it, it's like, well, what are you going to do? No one's going to stand up to us. You know, if Foligno's on the bench, he's not going to do anything. But with Delorier out there and things like that, they didn't want to mess around with that.
Mm-mm.
And not only that, you saw, you know, especially after Delorier, you know, opened the game with a pretty big hit on his first shift, then you saw Dumba stepping up and lighting somebody up with an open ice hit. And, you know, kind of like, you know, Ryan Carter, I think, even alluded to this during the broadcast, was he mentioned how, you know, when you get a player like this physical, everyone feels a bit taller. Like everyone feels like, you know, I can throw my weight around there because someone's not going to come and kill me because they're afraid that guy will kill him.
Yep.
You know, and there is something to be said for that, where maybe you feel a little more safer being physical because you have those other people that can take care of business if that's what it comes down to. And again, it's an early sample, at least so far, against a depleted Vegas squad, but still, in the past, that was one team that sometimes I felt kind of clowned the Wild, especially in the Ryan Reeves days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would just sit there and clown us, and you know, we didn't have a whole heck of a lot of an answer because we just don't have that kind of player anymore. And but now I think we kind of do. I think Delorier is definitely showing he's not afraid to step up against anybody else in the league, and the other players know it too, especially in the Pacific. You know, they've already seen that guy quite a bit already, so I think that's a good thing for the Wild in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. It makes it's a difference maker, and I'm looking forward to how things turn out in the postseason with these guys. Just stay healthy, right?
knock on wood.
Mm-hmm. Knock on wood. Here we go. If I was over this little test here. So there's two other trades, one super minor, I guess you could say, because it was basically Victor Rask for a bag of Doritos or something. That's what they say. So,
Jack Squat, as Russo
yep.
would say.
That was funny. Yeah. The guy with his last name is Squat, first name Jack. You know, that
Yeah.
was funny. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is, unless there's some miracle conditional pick mixed in there. But,
Yeah, but they needed to get rid of him. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
he was not happy in Iowa. That was
Oh,
clear.
yeah, I can imagine.
You know, the funny thing was he was a point per game player in Iowa, but at the same time, watching him play from shift to shift, the effort was not there. Yet, because he is a skilled play, I mean, he's still an NHL skill player playing in the AHL. The team kept throwing him out in the ice, which was both good and bad. The good part was that he has the skill to maybe finish a play that maybe other guys couldn't. But on the other end of it, from an effort, it was almost like losing a player because he wouldn't hustle. You know,
He's pouting, yeah.
he was only gonna play hard in the offensive zone, and by that I mean like give you 60%. You know, and if you know he was just looking to shoot the puck wherever he could, or get involved in a scoring play. But beyond that, it was pretty half-hearted. And from his standpoint, I'm sure from a sense of pride, it has to sting. There's no,
Yeah.
it's being human. There's no way that it couldn't feel embarrassing, you know. You know, when you're going from plane rides to bus rides, there's no hiding that. I mean, it's miserable. And you know, I think that was beneficial for him and the team, and if we get anything out of it, whatever.
Yeah.
But that it just needed to end. I mean,
Yep.
that's all I can say.
Yeah, it finally did end. A lot of us were hoping sooner, but at least we don't have any dead cap to worry about, which is nice. We
Nope.
didn't we never bought him out. That's a good thing.
Although
Yeah.
we did retain 50% of his salary
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah, for
in
the
that.
remainder of this year. Yeah.
But I mean, it's just whatever
Couple months.
prorated it is, so it's really not that big of a deal overall.
Yep, like $1 million, like for a couple months or something. That's the
Probably
good,
not even that,
not
given
even,
how far
yeah.
we are. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's
But
about a
still.
fourth, yeah. Yep. So the other one was the one that drew some ire from a lot of us, I would have to say. It drew ire from Bill Guerin as well. Speaking of Jack
Oh,
McBain,
McBain.
yeah. Luckily we got a second rounder that can bring up some of the whole college players, this and that. Some obviously go on to have spectacular careers, of course. Others, who knows, and some get demanding. They want to kind of control where they go, this and that. And a lot of those guys don't end up having as great a career as they think. What was I leading towards? Oh yes, Bill Guerin. I just love the way he responded when one of the reporters asked him when they were talking about the trade. How did they say it? Was it an easy decision, or did you have a hard time making this decision? He said no.
Yeah, he said,
He was just
no,
no.
nope.
I love that. Yeah, he's like, once they don't want to be here, he can go. I like
Yep.
that.
Well, I mean, I think the Wild, given their situation, he probably felt that for McBain, there was opportunity here, but McBain obviously felt, you know, maybe he looked at Nico Sturm and
Yeah.
Nico Sturm's situation where, you know, Nico kind of felt the same way. Nico looked at it and said,
Stuck, yep.
I don't see how I'm not going to be anything other than a fourth line center for you guys because you obviously have the spots for the other people. I don't see myself getting an opportunity, you know, especially since you just asked me to take a longer contract at a lower price point.
Yeah,
You know, and
exactly.
so
Yep.
he rejected the deal, and then at that point it's just like the same thing, you know.
Yost,
Nope.
yep.
I'll find another place for you then. And you know, and fortunately, I guess at that point for maybe Nico Sturm, or depending on how you want to look at it, the Avalanche made a phone call, and Bill Guerin did not hesitate and made the move player for player, and that's what happens. But, you know, with McBain, it seems weird that you would want to, I guess, go to a place, and but I guess in Arizona,
purgatory.
You know,
yeah.
it's the NHL boneyard, but you know, from an opportunity perspective, you know, when there's potential that he could rise and move up because they're a team that quite honestly needs somebody to start shining over there to keep that team really going. So maybe he felt that was more desirable to be a bigger fish in a smaller pond, literally and figuratively, now that it'll be a 5,000-seat arena in Arizona State. But, I mean, he'll have that opportunity that perhaps he wouldn't have here. And to get a second-round pick for a guy you drafted in the third round, I'm fine with that.
yeah, it's like moving up in the draft, right? Yeah. Basically, we moved up a little bit. Yeah.
The only way this could really go bad now would be as if McBain goes down to Arizona and just lights things up, and then it becomes kind of a what if, you know, what if he would have stayed here kind of thing. But anything short of that, you know, if he just becomes a fringe guy, or barely holds on, you got a second round pick for a guy that maybe isn't an NHLer. You don't know what you have yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's a pretty good return. And, we had mentioned this before with, like, college free agents, like, you know, Casey Wellman comes to mind, you know, where, you know, we had to battle this, we had to win this big sweepstakes or whatever to get him, you know. And
who,
it didn't turn
right?
out.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a bad hockey player. I mean, all these people are great hockey players.
Mm-hmm.
But he just wasn't an NHLer. That's just what it was. You know, like, Nico Sturm was that sought-after college free agent. And to be all honesty, I thought he was reasonably successful. He was an NHL talent.
Mm-hmm. I like him, yeah.
A bottom six player. I have no qualms about his work ethic. I felt he did everything he could do to try to make him the best he could be. Was he worthy of more opportunities than maybe he got? I think there's an argument to be made that maybe he should have been given more of a look in places. But unfortunately, you know, there's other players on the roster, and depending, you know, no matter how good you think you are, others, you know, the organization obviously valued other players, and, you know, he made his decision for himself. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, he was one of the few college free agents where I felt we got, you know, he lived up to what we thought he was going to be, I guess, as opposed to, you know, a lot of promises, a lot of shiny credentials, but not a lot of production. You know, like Sam Annis. I mean, Annis was a guy that people lobbied for a lot, you know, coming out of Quinnipiac, and he's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
Good player. But did I ever, you know, watching him play in Iowa, did I ever, you know, even as good as he was in his MVP season, did I think he was NHL material? No.
No, unfortunately.
I mean, he's small. Mm-hmm. He's not overly fast for a player that is small. And it's hard to imagine how a player like that's going to survive at the NHL level. Now, obviously, he's a very productive and capable AHL player, but there's players like that are AHL ringers, but they're just not NHL players, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Mayhew, another college free agent, you know, who was a good college player, but I would say he's an even better AHL player. He's been a pretty good offensive force at the AHL level. You know, coming out of Ferris State, which is not a big time program, but he obviously was very capable for Iowa. But, you know, despite his opportunities, he just couldn't replicate that same kind of dominance at the NHL level, and that's the difference sometimes. That's just the cold hard facts of it all. So, you know, missing out on him for a second round pick doesn't seem like that bad of a deal. I don't have any sour taste in my mouth about it.
Yep, I feel okay as well. It took him forever to really get going too in college. So that was that as well. Then they get this big like big head on their, they get the big head going when they have a hot season and well, cash in. I guess what they say is strike while the iron's hot, right? Yeah. So I mean, yep, I'm happy too and wishing him the best, of course. It's kind of like the old Brennan Menel syndrome, you can say. Like I don't know what to say or do. So please get rid of me, immediately.
No, I'd say that's exactly the scenario in a lot of ways. And the
Right
same
side
thing happened.
defenseman.
Well, but also I would say the same thing between how Bill Guerin handled it when his death sentence was when he decided to go play in the KHL. You know,
Oh yeah. Yep.
even though he played very, very well in the KHL, Guerin wanted nothing to do with him at that point. He's like, nope, you've already burned your bridge with me.
Yep.
You know, if you want a chance, it'll be with a different organization. It won't be here. So good luck to you. You know, and it hasn't been a great season for him in Toronto.
Yeah, like nothing. Yeah, I couldn't believe what I saw, and in the AHL, yeah, it's like way down.
So, well, you know, the thing is it's coaches, maybe certain coaches give you opportunities where other coaches won't. And if you don't get that same kind of opportunity, you don't shine the same way.
Yeah,
Because
it's screwed.
and it can be, you know, now that he's back with Chuck Fletcher in
Yep.
Florida, or sorry, Philadelphia.
Philly, yep.
You know, for future considerations, which is what he was traded for at the very end of the deadline. You know, maybe he'll get that opportunity with the Phantoms to bring it back or whatever. But obviously, it didn't work out. He didn't prove
No.
everybody wrong in Toronto, that's for sure.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's kind of heartbreaking because I was a fan. Coming out of,
Yeah,
obviously,
I
Woodbury,
think
yeah.
everyone was. I think a lot of us were rooting for him just because he took the. He took the path less traveled, and that's been his story of his career. So, you know, he took the quote unquote the long way. You
Really
know.
long way, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So, you think we're ready for, actually, do you want to go down memory lane a little bit with the possible, with the trade deadline signings trades? Where you brought that up off the mic. It
Yeah,
sounds like
well, we
fun.
have. Okay, so just to put everybody, I guess, so they understand the where this is coming from. Before the podcast started, you and I were kind of talking about the trade deadline and things like that. And obviously, the trade deadline and the Minnesota Wild have had a long and maybe sad history.
Yeah.
So what I did was, is I kind of just ran down the Minnesota's trade deadline history going back to all the way like 2007. And because one of the things that I think that makes maybe this deadline different, knock on wood to a certain extent, was that I didn't feel after this deadline a feeling of like buyer's remorse, where I felt that the team had overextended itself with the moves that they made. In other words, what we paid did not seem to be way too much, but. So, and maybe you'll understand that when I kind of go through this trip down memory lane, especially if maybe you're new to the team and stuff like that. So, 2007, Minnesota Wild trade deadline, Dominic Moore for a third round pick in 2007 from Pittsburgh. I think if I remember correctly, we brought in Dominic Moore. We only played him a handful of the games, and then I think we made him a healthy scratch. Like, it was kind of like, well, what was the point? You bring a guy in and then you don't even use him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a third round pick, but still,
Yep.
it
Well, a
seemed kind of weird
little
when
bit,
you didn't use the person you traded for. More infamously, 2008,
yeah.
Minnesota Wild traded for Chris Simon with the New York Islanders for a sixth round pick. Chris Simon, of course, was an enforcer kind of player. kind of reviled for some of the dirty things he had done that season, including stomping on a player with his skate.
Oh, yeah, like his ankle,
which,
right?
Which
yeah.
earned him, like a, which earned him, I think, like a 20-game suspension
mm-hmm.
for that. And so he came to the team, and of course, the fans about lost their crap when we traded for Chris Simon.
Yeah, it's like, that's the best we could do.
Yeah, but they felt they needed another pair of knuckles to go against tougher teams like the Ducks were when they still had, like, Chris Pronger and stuff like that.
Yep.
Because they were seen as a heavy Travis Mullen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those
they
guys.
Tough.
So
yeah.
It didn't work out so well in the playoffs. But yeah, Chris Simon. 2012, the Minnesota Wild picked up Eric Christensen.
Oh, shootout specialist. Yep.
Shootout specialist. Shootout ace. And a seventh round pick from the Rangers. For Casey Wellman, so that's
mm-hmm.
where we traded our college free agent that didn't quite work out.
Yep.
And to get our shootout ace, which means so much in the playoffs.
yeah, that was funny. Zero. Yep.
Which, by the way, I should probably mention that 2012 there, that would have been pre-Suter Parisi, so that was the spring
yes.
before they arrived.
Yep, that was, we had that hot little start and then just completely fell off the map.
Yep. But speaking of that first season, now Parisi and Suter on the team.
Mm-hmm.
First trade deadline with them in play, Jason Pominville.
Yeah. Yep.
For a first-round pick in 2013, which turned out to be Nikita Zadorov, a second-round pick in 2014, and Matt Hackett. Goalie, and Johan Larsson, who ironically just got traded on the deadline to the Capitals this time around. He was a second-round pick.
Johan Larsson, right? Yep.
Yeah, Johan Larsson from Laos, Sweden, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of our Sabre drafts.
mm-hmm. Yeah, that was that really late trade deadline because of the lockout, right?
Yep.
April 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Pominville, of course, unfortunately, got hurt shortly into that first year with the Wild because he got hit by Dustin Brown.
Oh yeah.
And
yep.
that effectively took him out of the playoffs. I think Dustin Brown got like a measly 2-game suspension for it, and basically he was going to sit out anyways because they were getting ready to be in the playoffs as it was, and so a lot of people thought that was an absolute joke of justice.
Yeah.
And then Pominville did okay for a little bit. We then doubled down on our trade by extending him right away.
Mm-hmm. 5 years.
Turned out
yep.
to have a lot of buyer's remorse.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then of course, then later we shipped him out. As part of, along with Marco Scandella, later on, in an off-season move, not a deadline move. Next year, 2014, has some beauties for you.
Oh,
again,
can I jump in?
Sabres. Sure.
Super quick. I mean, just for fun, just for a little yucks or whatever. The same day, obviously, this is a no name, so but it's just for fun. The Wild acquired their first Delorier, Jeff Drouin Delorier, for future considerations.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that funny? I just pulled this up for fun cause so I could keep up with you. The trade tracker.
That, he would have been he was like a minor league guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he ever played in the NHL.
Yeah, he's probably an Iowa Wild special there, or maybe even Houston Arrows, depending. Houston Arrows, actually.
Mm-hmm, and then cups of coffee. Yeah, Houston Arrows, and then cups of coffee with, like, Edmonton and stuff. I just thought I'd bring that up because it's funny. That's another Delorier, yeah.
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt.
I don't know if they're related or not.
Maybe.
2014, the Minnesota Wild deadline traded for Matt Molson.
Oh.
And Cody McCormick.
Oh, that.
For a second round pick in 2014.
Yep.
Second round pick in 2016, and Torrey Mitchell.
And Torrey Mitchell, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Matt Milano.
Oh, he was so good just like 2 years before, and then he just
Yeah.
stopped. He literally just stopped, didn't he?
The magic pretty much left when he left the Islanders.
So
He
weird.
was money with the Islanders. I mean, he was just this wasn't a big player, but he always seemed to be scoring the clutch.
Yeah, 30 goals, yep.
And then it just the game just seemed to leave him. And then strangely enough, then he ended up with the Kings, which had him another time too. And then he ended up playing in their minors and seemed to be happy just being a minor leaguer guy. One of
Yeah,
those
he's
rare ones
still.
that didn't mind playing in the minors his last few years of his career.
Yeah, he's. Would you believe this? Because I just pulled him up. He's still
Yeah.
playing. He's still. He must love hockey. Yeah, AHL. Yeah,
Yeah.
he's
He's with
5 years in a
Ontario,
row.
isn't he?
He was there. I guess now Hershey Bears. Yeah,
Oh, there are the Hershey Bears? Okay.
isn't that the darndest? He's still playing.
But those, I mean,
Yeah.
Hershey is a good market.
Yeah.
I mean, they get a lot of fans. You feel like you're the biggest thing in town. And let's face it, it's also the minors too.
Yep.
There isn't much scrutiny. You can have a life with your family. Some of those can actually be pretty sweet trips if you get the right organization.
It sounds like
And
fun,
then
honestly. Yeah.
also 2014, Ilya Prsikalov
Yeah, there you go.
for a fourth round pick in 2014. And little did we know we'd really need Ilya Prsikalov that year.
He was
When
good, huh?
with the weird injuries, and then he ended up being the starter in the playoffs.
Yeah, helped us win a series, yeah.
Yeah, I also remember toward the end of the season, the Wild had I think we had an absolute garbage game against Arizona, and Ilya Vryzgalov was a part of the closed team meeting, and apparently he spoke up and said some things, which for Ilya Vryzgalov, you never know what he was gonna say. So I'm sure that had to have been interesting, but I actually liked him, and he's a character. So I appreciate a player that sometimes a bit of a character, even if he might seem a bit out there, like Ilya Prsikalov, who could turn a hockey conversation into a TED talk about the universe. humongous big, as a friend of mine used to have as a soundbite on his show. But yeah, I don't know. I liked his little stint with the Wild, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me too.
2015, Minnesota Wild acquired Sean Bergenheim for a third round pick in 2016, which ironically became Rem Pitlick. Rem Pitlick was drafted with that pick from the Florida Panthers. Bergenheim, I think that was the end of his NHL career at that point. I think he ended up playing back in Finland again. 2016, the Minnesota Wild acquired David Jones from Calgary for a sixth round pick and Nicklas Backstrom.
And Nicholas Backstrom.
So that was when, of course, the end of his years where we kind of wanted him to go because he was taking up cap space, and he wasn't the same person. And then remember he ended up having that first start against the Wild where we like put three goals on him in like the first 5 minutes of the game. And I remember they put the tribute on after like the second goal as the team was still cheering the goal, and it's like, oh, that hurts. And then but then he got us back at the very end of the season. I think in the last game of the year, I think he shut the Wild out, which was his last NHL start. So
Yeah, it's a good way to end it.
payback's a bitch, I guess. So
Yes.
then in 2017, Martin Hanzel
Oh, I want to
and
pound the screen.
Ryan White for a first round pick in 2017, a
Yep.
second round pick in 2018, and a conditional pick in 2019, and Grayson Downing, which I think he was a minor league guy for us, of course, to the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah, minor
So,
league, no NHL. Yep.
but I mean, when you see, to me, that's the trade where I look
NHL.
at what we got this time around versus what we got back in 2017. where the guy we wanted was this, the center who we thought could fit in the top six, and we end up throwing a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a conditional pick, and a minor league player, compared to a conditional first-round pick that only happens if we make it to the Western Conference Finals, and he has at least four wins during that time, during the playoffs. To me, that just seems like such a smarter deal. It's nuanced, where if we flame out, then they get a second round pick. It's hard to have a lot of regret over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where
big time.
With this deal, you're like, you're guaranteed to lose these things, regardless if the Wild did well or did poorly. And immediately, I was like, oh, we better hope this works.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's gonna be painful. And it was. And I know this wasn't quite a deadline deal. It was a little bit earlier than the deadline, but I kind of felt like it was.
Mm-hmm.
This is one where we actually sold, and sold wisely. I probably should have had the Nick Leddy trade in here, because that was kind of a deadline day deal too, but I didn't throw that in there. That's my fault.
I'm not sure what
year that was. The one where we traded Leddy and Kim Johnson for Cam Barker with Chicago. That was horrible. But anyway, this one's more of a good one. In 2020, the Minnesota Wild received Alex Galchenyuk, Kalen Addison, and a first-round pick, which became Carson Lambos from Pittsburgh for Jason Zucker.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, where I felt we struck while the iron was hot, probably hotter than anyone else would have perceived. Because Jason Zucker was kind of disappointing, and yet we got a pretty great haul. I mean, Alex Galchenyuk was a dry well, but the first-round pick in Kalen Addison?
Yeah, two possible.
You.
Yeah, possibly two really good defensemen there.
It's not always about buying. Sometimes it's about picking the right time to sell, and, kind of going with the McBain thing, getting a second-round pick, we might look back and be laughing about it.
I can't believe we
got a second-round pick for that guy.
Look what we did,
I just thought that would be interesting and kind of maybe putting things in a little bit of perspective.
Yeah.
We didn't get a first-line center. I know I saw one of the fans talk about that they weren't happy, but all things considered, I didn't feel like there was places where we overpaid. And so that, to me, makes me feel a lot better about the deadline and what we did, because there isn't that element of did we go too far, did we give up something in the future that I think we'll regret later, which I don't think we did.
Yeah. Yep. I don't have that pit in my throat that I did on so many of those trades in the past.
Yeah.
You could just feel it. The hands all on you just knew, I swear.
Well, we're about a little over an hour, so I don't mean to.
Yep. Oh, yeah, we better. Yep. Yep, we better jump into the fan interaction. ASAP.
Sure.
I'm sorry. Yep.
No worries.
Yep, so I guess we can just do a one segment shot if you're good with that.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, might as well, since we're kind of on a roll. So, getting to the Twitter account is, of course, where we go for fan interaction, and Derek is kind enough to send out the bat signal, which he did multiple times this week, so we could pick up a good amount of discussion, the trade deadline and the future possibilities of the Wild here, short-term, long-term. Of course, when you want to put a comment in, comment, question, anything like that, fun question, hashtag BTWMN, hashtag BTWMN, and again, at Brave the Wild is the Twitter account. Of course, Derek's is at Crease and Assist. Obviously writes a lot of wonderful articles post-game, and that his wife writes pre-game articles. Yep, Teresa Ferries, yep. So very, very cool. So I was ranting about the Blackhawks game a little bit, that it was kind of boring, but at least we won. That was cool. The McBain conversation. Let's see what someone said here. I just wrote thoughts, basically. Oh, yeah, Derek, you wrote, yep, we got a second-round pick. We're not known, so yeah, for sure. Now, we discussed that extensively. What's the next one? Okay, yep, you shared it there. Ask about any trade deadline moves. Then I wrote about Fleury. Yep, and you said you're joining. Yep, the show, which is awesome. Let's see again. Capo Kakinen, and nobody comment on that. Brian Herrera. Okay, here we go. Brian Herrera says, "Do you think these trades are going to help in the playoffs, or will they just set us back? A few new faces in the locker room now, but will they mesh well with the current core?" I think so. I like the size addition. The personalities are good. There's definitely the personalities, I think, mesh fantastically with this team. You know, like DeLaurier, Marc-Andre Fleury, and Middleton too.
Yeah, I would agree entirely.
Sorry.
Middleton was joking that, you know, he took number five because the defenseman most like himself was Nicklas Lidström.
Oh,
You
that's
know,
funny.
which is hysterical because he was explaining why he lost. You know, of course, 21 was already taken with Brandon Duhaime, which was his number in San Jose. So they both DeLaurier and well, heck, even Tyson Jost put him in there too because it's pretty close to the deadline. All of these guys, and even Marc-Andre Fleury, all seem to be pretty positive personalities. They all seem to understand what their role is and their purpose is.
Yep.
And, you know, while Fleury's an older player, the
Yep.
other three kind of fit within the overall age group of a lot of these guys. So I think that meshes pretty well with, like, at least from a personality sense with the team. And that's important because, I mean, that's something that we, you know, obviously the moves that happened this offseason had all to do with how the locker room environment was. And I don't think these moves are counterproductive to that. I don't think they, you know, suddenly create, you know, a happy-go-lucky room into an intense, focused, you know. I think they fit in really seamlessly for what their locker room vibe is, as much as I can tell what it is not being in the locker room.
Yep. From what I can say too is, honestly, I would be surprised if there was any issues. Honest to God, obviously, there's like nobody's really getting messed with here. It's not really messing up the chemistry, so I feel pretty good about them. Brian Herrera has the next one also, and here we go to the retro games. I love it. He says, "Also, who do you got in a fight, Mega Man or Samus Aran?" I've always been a Mega Man guy. Again, NES though, I'm just extremely old school with Mega Man. Obviously, Super Nintendo is very retro in these days. Even PS2 is considered retro, which to me, that's foreign to me. That's not retro. It is, but it isn't. I just was more into the Mega Man games than the Metroid games, I'd have to say, even though great classic games. So I'll go with Mega Man.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
'Cause, you know, as I started to think about it, I actually was thinking about yesterday,
Mm-hmm.
was when you think about both the characters, Samus Aran or Samus Aran, I'm sure someone's typing furiously, it's Samus or whatever.
Famous. Yep. Yeah.
You know, get all mad at the pronunciation.
Special
Or Mega
Cecil,
Man, or Rock Man if you want to go
Oh,
Japanese.
yeah. Yep.
But I was gonna say
Yeah.
that they're basically kind of the same character. It's a person in a suit with an arm cannon. I mean, it really is kind of the same thing. Now, there's certain abilities that some have over others. You know, obviously the ball that the Samus can turn into, which I think would be a really cool ability for Mega Man to have, but he still has this little slide that he can do.
Yep.
I think overall, while Samus Aran, at least by herself, just with the abilities that she gains, just like with the jump and the rolling ball, gives her an out advantage. The fact if you get it powered up, meaning like whether you've played through all the levels and gained the different power-ups from the different characters, you know, no matter which Mega Man game you're talking about, then that puts the advantage to Mega Man, you know. So, you know, whether it's Mega Man 1 with, you know, the Cutters or the Bomb Man or Guts Man Strength or Ice Man or, you know, like Mega Man 3, Spark Man, Magnet Missiles, all that kind of stuff, that would be the advantage that Samus or Samus couldn't handle. So it would have to be a powered up Rock Man. If it's generic straight up Rock Man versus Samus, I'm putting Samus as the winner.
Yep,
Just
I
my
could
two
totally
cents.
feel that. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, be more defensive minded, right? No, yeah, but no, that's good. So, yep, you shared a KFAN girl's question. She says, "The winger I can understand, the goalie I cannot. We are not going to win the cup this year, so the all-in feeling right now seems really odd to me." I kind of feel that way about the Vikings and Twins, but we'll see. Because obviously, yeah, but I don't want to get into those guys right now.
I guess
I kind of get that. Yep, go ahead.
I don't feel like it's as all in as Jody kind of describes,
Yep, Jody.
because Jody Halvey is the one who asked the question.
Jody Halby, yep.
Jody's gonna thinking that it's all in. I would feel that way more like we mentioned just moments before with the Martin Hansel deal, when you're trading a first round pick. And you're trading like a, multiple second round picks. That to me is more of an all-in move where you're really throwing the future at it, and you're saying, we need to win right now. And I don't feel like they gave up so much in the future that they don't still have a future. We didn't give up any prospects in any of our trades, with the exception, I guess, of Jack McBain, who said he wasn't going to sign here anyways. So we were going to lose him in August, or instead we decided to lose him in March. And we got a second round pick. So I don't feel like that's an all-in move. That's cutting your losses, cutting bait. but in the case of, I don't, like I said, I don't have buyer's remorse. And if Jody feels like she has buyer's remorse over what our potential risk is with the Marc-Andre Fleury trade, I guess, that's like her prerogative. I just don't think that we pushed in way more than we should have for it. Like I said, the thing I like the most about the Marc-Andre Fleury trade is that it is nuanced, in the sense that if unless they go to the Western Conference Finals and he plays and is a big part of that by getting wins in the playoffs, then we just give up a second round pick. So we would still keep our first. And to me, that makes it a smart trade. The Martin Hansel trade had no, there was no quote unquote safety net. This one has a safety net built in. And that's why I don't have any kind of, like you said, that sinking feeling in your stomach, like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I don't have that. So I don't know. That I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same. Because yeah, like the whole Martin Hansel thing, right away you're thinking, that's a lot to give up for, a guy that's, yeah, he's big, woohoo, that doesn't guarantee anything. And apparently the personality didn't even mesh from what they say. Maybe I'm way off, but
And it should be
yeah.
noted that was the Parisi Suter locker room. So the
Yes.
new guy comes in,
Yes.
and he no, the thing about Martin Hansel in that trade, he actually played okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. I mean, he wasn't
Like,
like Matt Molson, who did nothing.
yeah. Like,
He
scratch
was
him. Yeah.
okay. He was okay, but I'm sure the locker room was like, "You're not getting my spot, mate." I'm sure he was not welcomed. Whereas the
Yeah.
guys here, cripes, it sounds like it's like kids going off to summer camp. Like, yeah, we're all here. Hey, buddy, how you doing? And that's what it seems like now.
Yeah, I love it.
So.
I absolutely love it. That's a, it's just, yeah, like you said, totally different vibe, different locker room, different leadership. That team had a bad attitude, obviously. Like, no, like you're not getting on the power play or whatever with this and that. You're not replacing this guy or this. You're not messing with our chemistry. So it's like you can't even make a trade with those jackasses. Dare I call
Well,
them that?
no, unless they asked for him,
Yes.
unless it was approved by them, then they'll hate it.
Dare I say, yeah. That's like, sounds like the Los Angeles
You almost
Lakers.
can't win.
Yeah, you can't win. It sounds like the Lakers right now, but I'll leave that alone, right? As a little side swipe. I know.
Or a senior class in prom where they just bitch about everything. Doesn't matter what you do.
There's like no win. Literally a no win. Yep. You shared Tony. Tony Perkle. Is that how we say it? Yep. Tony Perkle. Why am I MAF? What a. Do you know what that abbreviation means? I don't know why I'm
Marc-Andre
blanking.
Fleury.
Marc-Andre Fleury. I'm sorry. Thank you. I should know better. Whoops. That might be important. Marc-Andre Fleury might be a bit past his prime. Yeah, I should have known. But the moves show Bill Guerin is going for it. I don't hate it. Plus the move Wallstat, plus the move with Wallstat gets to North America sooner than later. Yeah, that's the other thing you have there. There's your safety net again, because long term, there's your guy. You don't have to worry too much about, like, oh my God, what are we going to do at goalie? You know, this and that, and you still have Cam Talbot, like we talked about much earlier, how he's playing better now, and the combination of the two goalies, there's less pressure on both of them, and again, you have the safety net. And Jesper Wallstedt. Luckily, I believe it's his father, Jonas. I followed him, and he followed back, so pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah, I was like, this is nice.
Well, you know, that's the thing too, is, you know, the question was, especially with Cam Talbot and Kakinen together, was, okay, should we move on from Talbot if Kakinen's going to play well? And then, of course, you always know you really have your future number one in Wallstedt. That's what you drafted. And, you know, now it's kind of clear. The path is pretty clear that you're showing some faith in your not yet number one goaltender by saying, okay, here's your obvious landing spot. And to me, I'm sure for Wallstedt, that has to feel, you know, you talk about Nico Sturm feeling like, okay, well, where's the place for me? Well, I would think if I'm Jesper Wallstedt, I look at the Wild and you're going, ah, I can see, and, you know, like they can see it, like they can project 2, 3 years ahead, and they're like going, okay, I see where I'm gonna be someday. And that'll make you feel a lot better about coming to North America to get yourself ready for that spot, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about him coming as soon as next year. That'd be amazing. At least maybe AHL or something. That is really, really awesome. You don't have to wait 4 years or something. So Jay Bushy jumps in. Welcome back, Jay. Always loved hearing from you. He says Russo called Middleton a hard-nosed defenseman. Pardon me. That was my fault. Do you like this pickup? Yes, I do. Because I kept ranting and raving. Please bring in, well, mostly ranting. Please bring in a large third-pairing defenseman. And looks like we've certainly done that. Of course, a very small cap hit of, what is it, 725, I believe. An arbitration eligible restricted free agent in the offseason. So we'll see what happens there. But yes, I do like the pickup. I like the physicality. He's like a legitimate big guy, like Merrill's tall. That's about it. He's tall. Kind of like Jack McBain. He's tall. Tall is okay, but but size is another thing. Size, aggressiveness, and like you said, a ton of hits and all that. Or actually, it was DeLaurier already has 6 hits in one game for Minnesota, and he's like, was he sixth overall in the NHL? So amazing. Love the physicality.
I feel like I've kind of talked about some of this already, but
Yeah.
you know, if you're, maybe mentioning who, since someone brought up, like the chemistry part of it, if there's any players that maybe on the Wild are not necessarily thrilled with the moves, it would probably be Dmitry Kulikov, who looks like the odd man out at least early on. Forget about Jordy Benn; he's still working the James Sheppard Memorial Popcorn Maker up in the
Yes,
press box. But
yes. Oh, I love that. James
and we've
Webber
been calling him for
Memorial.
years. Yep. But then there's of course Alex Goligoski's going to be moving down to the third pair.
Yep.
But I think if he's honest about his own play, that's kind of where he should be.
He's
He seemed to be
falling.
struggling with the minutes that he had, especially in some of the physical areas in and around the crease. He showed some struggles, and Middleton is going to give him is going to put is going to relegate him to the third pairing. But I do think that's maybe better where he's suited in terms of ice time. I think it would be good to then have a capable veteran puck mover on the third pairing as it is. And Middleton provides, that physical stoutness that, was not there on a pairing between Goligoski and Spurgeon. Like I said, Spurgeon's going to give you every pound that he's got, all maybe 170 pounds of it at most. But, at the end of the day, he's 5 foot barely 7 or 8 feet, 5 foot 7, 5 foot 8, 170 pounds. He's not going to be able to push out a 6 foot 3 guy that's screening a goalie like Middleton can. So I think that makes them both better, and I think it makes the team better, even though for them it might mean a reduction in their role or kind of being found as the odd man out.
For sure. Yep, and I think that's it's the right situation, I think, right now for the Minnesota Wild. Yep. Mm-hmm. So we'll jump into the next question here. You shared Ron, A.A. Ron. He says, well, I like Kakanen long-term compared to number 33. He was 2-6-1, ouch, since the beginning of February, and a goals against average nearly 4 in March. I think the moves speak more to GM Bill Guerin's lack of comfort level with, I almost called him Kirill Kaprizov, Kapo Kakanen, in that the Wild have 5 back-to-backs in the final 22 games and need 2 solid goaltenders. Yeah, I mean, I kept thinking Kakanen ultimately was the better of those two, Talbot and Kakanen, but, well, I mean, it is what it is. Talbot gets less time, ends up playing better, so I feel good about it. I will miss Kakanen. There's always going to be that one feeling like what could have been, this and that, but I'm comfortable with the move, though.
Yeah, I would say I agree with it for the most part. I do believe this move, in a way, is maybe more of a reflection of their belief in Kakanen than Talbot.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that, understanding both goalies where they're at in terms of their age and their career and their experience, that I think that it's not just going to become Marc-Andre Fleury's crease. I think it is going to be a rotation, at least to start, at least for the rest of the regular season. And then from there, it might be, a matter of riding the hot hand, kind of the way we saw with, like, I know this is eons ago and it's a way different Wild team, but that's kind of like what we did with Manny Fernandez and Dwayne Rolison.
Yep.
We found the hot hand, and then they carried us through each one of them carried us through a series.
Separate playoff.
And we wouldn't have got to the Western Conference Finals if it hadn't been having both of them. We needed, it was unusual for a team to do that, but, that team was lucky they had that ability to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny, too, how whenever one guy started to drop off, then the other guy would come in red hot, and then, then we'd come back, those both 3-1 deficits and win the series. I love that. Wasn't that cool? Oh,
that was awesome. A ton of fun.
Lots of memories, yep.
Yeah, a lot of nostalgia with that. And like I said, we're hoping to get back at least to where that team went. We have never been even close to that since.
Mm-mm, not at all, thanks to Chicago. to Teresa Ferries, welcome on board. She says, so now that the Wild have essentially 2 starting goaltenders in Talbot and Fleury, will we see a regular rotation in starts? And, yep, I mean, I think so, especially like the regular season, like you said, and maybe the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with what Teresa had to say. I have to, otherwise I have to sleep on the couch. That's my wife. So.
Yep.
but no, I mean, in all seriousness, I think that.
Accurate,
I think you want to do that for two reasons. One, you want to keep both engaged, and I think that makes sense. I don't think you want to. I mean, we do have kind of let's face it, the team has the brutal stretch that it has because of the COVID hiatus that it had for 2 months. So it has a brutal stretch of games coming up, and I don't think you want to sit there and just ride one goalie hard all the way into that and then have the other one just sit there. And then if that one breaks down, then go, oh, well, it's yours now. Good luck.
Yeah, that would be a mistake. Yeah.
I think you want them both, keep them ready to go. And not only that, you want to maybe have the potential to keep other teams guessing as to who's going to be there that night.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep.
Because every goaltender is a little bit different. I realize that, goaltending now is maybe more scientific than it used to be, where it was maybe more based purely on athleticism and reflexes. But still, there is a little bit differences in style and whatnot. But I think having two guys makes – teams have to prepare or think about it a little bit differently, and if that's something you can change up, I think that's to your advantage.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I can be like a dual threat.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. So as we jump into the next one, Music Geek at Darth Icky 42, wild about hockey too. He says, with Capo out, and I love absolutely love the gif there with Snoopy in the penalty box. I still remember that Peanuts. It was, I believe, a boy named Charlie Brown. That
Yep.
was cool. I love those from the good old days. With Capo out, we pick out a flower amongst a bunch of thorns. Yep. Now with two, yeah, they were thorns. Now with two somewhat top-notch goalies, how much better are our chances of clinching the Central Division as long as the Avs and Blues keep up the momentum or keep the momentum? Do you think we might actually pass up the semifinal round? I don't think we're going to win the division. It's one of those things because not only would we have to be red hot beyond belief, Colorado would have to like collapse because they're just too far ahead of but clinching, but in the playoffs, clinching the division as they call it, winning two rounds, I think there's something. There's obviously a possibility at the end of the day. I feel somewhat optimistic going through this.
I would agree. I don't think there's a chance for us to win the division in the regular season. Like you mentioned, Colorado's just built up too big of a lead, and quite honestly, I don't think. I mean, I think that's a goal for the team to want to have as a, something to promote itself. I think that matters less than how you're playing going into the playoffs. I'd rather be playing very well than worried about whether I have another division banner up in my rafters. But I think that our chances of making out of the first round have definitely improved, and at a minimum. So, 'cause I wouldn't necessarily say that goaltending was going to be the reason we weren't going to make it, but goaltending and penalty killing certainly were the last few weeks have definitely been an area of concern for the team. I don't think there's any denying that. You just can't win when you're, being scored on the penalty kill almost 50% of the time.
Oh, my.
That's just not a sustainable thing. So I think that should boost their confidence considerably. And but like like we said with the pick, it's nuanced. So if this doesn't really amount to much and we end up being one and done, well, it's only a second round pick squandered. And I'm willing to throw that in there as a cheap ante for that opportunity, than I would be a first round pick where that's just a little more than I would want to go, but that's I'm fine with what we paid for what we're risking.
Same here, same here. So you shared Dabuti, I believe. Yep, Dabuti. I'm not, excuse me, I think not picking up a reliable, I think not picking up a reliable center will cost them in the playoffs. Winning at 47% won't help. Yep, that means the face-off circle, right?
Yep.
That it doesn't help. No question about that. That's still an area of concern. I'm hoping that the other nuances we improved will help at the end of the day, and maybe some guys can just step up at the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
please
I
win
can
some
tell you what
face-offs.
well, I responded to this individual on Twitter, and basically I said, I'd rather be worried about one problem than worried about three problems. Where if we didn't do anything, and we were worried still about our penalty kill, and we were still worried about goaltending and face-offs, I'd rather just be worried about just face-offs. And I feel like we took steps to address those needs. Now, whether that completely fixes it or fixes it mostly, that remains to be seen. But I definitely feel more confident about that to actually be fixed. As far as the draws go, yes, I realize that it's a possession game, but I also feel confident that this team has more ability to get the puck back. Whereas in previous years, especially when as a team we were a slower team, especially with some of the dead legs we kept, getting the puck back was problematic because we just didn't have the legs to go and get it. And some of that was the veterans that we bought out. Some of it was some of the people we let go. But I definitely feel like there's more team speed. So losing that draw, I feel like we can not only check people to get separate them from the puck and get it back, but I also feel we have the legs to chase it down. So I don't know. I don't feel that it's maybe as bad or as critical for our team as it would have been when we were a slower team and, you know, would struggle to get the puck back.
Mm-hmm, for sure, for sure. Yep. So we move on to the, you shared cap friendly, trade deadline
yep.
summary, number of trades by team. Winnipeg was number one with 5. Minnesota had 4 trades. Minnesota, Arizona, New York Rangers, Sharks, Montreal and Ottawa had 3. And then several teams had 2 and 1, of course. So, but yeah, so I guess we were second with 4 trades during the course of time. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, no one can say we didn't do it anything.
Yep, I agree. Yep, so it's nice to know that we were more active. So the next one, if you're ready, is Mike Wasik. And then you responded to him, but I'll read his first so it makes
sure.
Chronological sense. He says, I like all but the last statement. Golgosi went from just as good as Suter for less money to bench. How the mighty have fallen. And yep, and I agree with what you say here, and I think I'm guessing Mike does as well. He says, you said his game has declined. I hope that he ends up on the third pairing where perhaps he'll play better with less minutes. And hopefully, yeah, kind of like Talbot being a backup instead of a, you know, struggling starting goaltender that we were overusing. Golgosi, struggling top defense and we were overusing. Yeah, I mean, I've been insanely frustrated with Golgosi the last month and a half.
Well, and let's face it, when we were playing one game a week, like we were for about 2 months there, you know, yeah, you're going to have plenty of energy for that game. But when it's literally every other day you're playing a game, that's a whole different level of grind. And especially, I think, if you're an older player, it puts a lot of strain on you. And, you know, at times, especially when Dumba was out of the lineup, and our top four had kind of shrunk to a top three, and at times even just a top two, he was playing minutes that honestly he isn't really able to play anymore. And
yeah.
that kind of further exposes maybe your lack of legs or whatever it might be, your physical, you know, kind of deterioration. So, you know, less is more in a lot of different ways. I felt, you know, even going back to the days when we still had Suter, I felt like we played him way too much, although I think Suter played himself way too much. That's
yes.
the real way I feel about it.
GMRS, right? Instead
yeah.
of GMBG.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh.
Pretty much. But, you know, kind of that being said is that sometimes, you know, being on the ice all the time isn't the best solution. And, you know, he might be able to he might be better for himself and better for the team by playing on the third pairing. He really will. And, you know, it happens. And I think it happens to anybody. I don't know, maybe I'm the only one that feels this way, but I think Spurgeon's been kind of suspect this year a little bit. I think at times I've looked at him and haven't seen the same level of jump and escape either. And, you know, he's a player that's above 30 now. And again, that doesn't mean that he's like circling the toilet or circling the drain at this point in his career. But at the same time, there's very few players that just are ageless and just continue to be the same. Age is going to catch up to anybody. And sometimes that's when you got to dial down the minutes and then, you know, where you hope to get better quality shifts with less shifts, you know.
Yes, yep. Overusing anybody is not good.
Yep.
That's why, you know, the old infamous Suter was Gostolder, you know, and that kind of stuff killed the team. I can imagine being frustrated as hell if I was another defenseman, not just because I'm not playing as maybe as much as I probably should be, but because this guy is a selfish SOB and he's killing us. I mean, I'd be pissed. I'd be, Like I'd be
Or
cursing like Bill Guerin. Yeah.
like how, if you're the defenseman or whoever it is that's supposed to go out there on the power play, and he's just staying out there. He's
Yeah,
not coming
exactly.
up.
Yeah,
Because,
that's
and
what
to
it
me, the
is.
more we hear about this stuff, it sounds like that was what he did. Like, I'm out here. I'm gonna be out here until I feel like coming in.
Oh,
Well,
it'd make me so mad. Oh.
oh, I hate that too. Yeah, trust me.
Yeah, I would be pissed.
Yeah.
Yep, David jumps in while we're winding down to the last couple here. Three, I guess. David says, thoughts on Middleton? Not a lot of chatter surrounding him, but it looks to me like we should be optimistic about this pickup. Do you think the Wild plan to sign him next year? I think probably, yes, depending on how things go. Obviously, everything depends on how things go in the next few months here, but I would say why not? Obviously, he brings pretty much exactly what we need. I can't imagine him jacking the price up too high, so that's how I see that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think depending on how it goes, both the end of the regular season and into the postseason, if he performs well, I think it sounds pretty realistic that they would offer him a contract. Of course, the price point would be probably very a critical element of that because cap space is finite.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I think that the interest level at least would be pretty high, and maybe if they liked him so much, it may prompt them to have to move other people because they would rather keep him around for that intangible that they like. At least if we're hoping that he'll be the physical defenseman that we really have lacked for a long time, that might be the critical element they find to be more important, and thus maybe they look to jettison a Kulikov or a Merrill even, possibly, if they like his game so much, they'd rather spend the money on him than them.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that is the direction they go. Yeah, I don't think they're gonna keep both of those guys going forward. Next one, you shared Anthony Krenz. I hope I'm saying that correctly. What, there we go, exactly. What tough decisions do you see the Wild making this summer for salary cap reasons? I suspect we can't keep all the favorites. And yes, and some of the other not so favorites, like we were just talking about, the Merrills, the Kulikovs. I gotta think one of those two guys is gone. And obviously, the Dumba Fiala situation, one of those two guys is probably gone. Unfortunately, depends on what goes on with Fleury and all that, and how much he could demand from the market and what he'd be willing to sign with here. I think Daligoski is adios amigo. So that's pretty much where I lean.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of tough decisions to be had. Like if Fleury and Talbot look good between the pipes, are you tempted then to keep them?
Yes.
Because I don't think you're going to throw Wallstedt in as a backup goalie next year. I think you want him to see North American play at least a full season before you even think about that, one would
Yeah,
think.
that's too risky. Yeah.
If not more. Usually two seems to be the golden amount of time that they want to for somebody to season if you're a goaltender that's getting a lot of starts at the minor league level. But whatever, I still think that the Dumba slash Fiala scenario is really the biggest thing to watch for. Fiala, I think from a fan perspective, more people, I think more and more are coming to the conclusion that having him around gives the Wild two scoring lines, which that there's a lot to be said for having two dangerous scoring lines. In the past, Fiala has been on lines where he literally felt like he was on a line by himself with two plumbers. And now he has a skilled partner, really, with Matt Boldy. And Freddie Gaudreau seems to be building more and more chemistry every game. Between those two. And I think that's something that the team would want to keep together if it can. But then, of course, if you're going to keep Fiala, then you're going to have to lose Matt Dumba for sure. That's the only salary that could easily come off the books that could fill fill at least most of what you're going to have to pay to keep Fiala around. You know, if Fiala is asking for $8 million or more, you may not even have a choice.
That's game over. Yep.
And you're going to have to just deal them and cut your losses that way, which would be tragic, given what's happened. And that probably also maybe prompted the team's decision to push to get with Fleury, because maybe they realize this might be our best window for a couple years.
That could be the scenario, yeah.
You know, I think that's a realistic potential, realistic scenario as it is. And it's, I would say enjoy it now. The next 3 years or next 3.5 years are going to be pretty bleak when it's 12.5 or 12.7 and 14.7 and dead money.
Yep, amen to that. It's going to be very interesting. Hopefully they could, like I always called it, like programming an Atari game with, 4K available, trying to make E.T. in 6 weeks. I'm optimistic going forward, obviously concerned. I'm a pro Fiala guy. Dumba's not been nearly as productive as some of us hoped. So, I've been a big Fiala backer. Fiala's got a little special skill going on. So this last one isn't a question, it's a comment. Black Space, Sebastian Barton out of Mankato, Minnesota, unfortunately cheers for the wrong college hockey team, in my opinion. I'm sure some of the listeners cheer for that team as well. There's only one college hockey team I like, only one. I'm a full Gopher fan. he also does a podcast called God, Sex, Sin. Highly recommend that. Awesome show. He opens up a vein, basically, as was it Dan Barrero would use that terminology. He says, is this as close to peak excitement for all Minnesota fans that we've ever had? The Twins got get Sonny Gray and Mr. Correa there. That was insanely exciting last Saturday night, if I remember the timing. Wild get Fleury and have a great team. Vikings run it back. That part I don't like. But with the offensive coach, I do like. And then 3-4-D, yep. Some very exciting signings there, including a familiar Green Bay Packer pass rusher.
Gophers,
wasn't that cool? Oh, that's an exciting addition. As long as he's healthy and Daniil Hunter's healthy, there's that again, but both of them. But if they're both healthy, ooh. Gophers NCAA berth, Mavs, that is, of course, the Mankato, or Minnesota State Mankato Mavericks NCAA berth. I love the NCAA hockey tournament. Yeah, I'm generally an NHL guy, but when it comes to college hockey and the tournament, oh my, I can't wait.
Well, to me, if we're talking about peak Minnesota excitement, it's got to go back to, 91, 92 or whatever.
Yep.
When the Twins made the World Series, the North Stars made the Stanley Cup Finals, the Vikings made it to, the NFC Championship game and then to screw it up. Against Washington or whatever.
That was 87.
Yeah, I wish.
Yep. So that was 91. The 87 World Series.
Yeah, you're right. 91 was
Super Bowl.
91 was that was Super Bowl when it was hosted here.
Yep.
But still, it has to be something along those lines. And obviously, we don't know how far all these teams are going to go, but if they can do something like that, then that would be it. In terms of players coming here together for all the different sports teams, it's probably got to be close to being up there where, we've had different teams make their different splashes, but not really all in the same year. And that makes it probably the most exciting because you feel like everyone's getting something special. And there's reasons to be excited for all the different sports teams as opposed to, there's one team that's doing good, the rest are horrible. It's all got to be reflected with success on the field or court or ice, you can get all these moves, but until it leads to some kind of special run or, knock on wood, a championship.
Yes, please.
Then it doesn't then it doesn't really matter that much. I mean, I would still say the 90-91 with the North Stars and the Twins was, I think, peak Minnesota, in my opinion.
That was
Between
the
the
best year.
Stanley Cup Finals and the World Series,
Yeah, that was the
that's,
best year.
yeah.
No
So
doubt about that.
maybe all that really does, Joey, is it just outs that you and I are old. That's about it.
That's, yeah, 31 years ago,
We're
unfortunately.
men in our 40s, so
Yep.
we just proved it.
Yep, we're definitely not. I'm not born in any 90s. I'm not even born in the 80s. Yep, we're 70s boys.
That's
Yeah.
right.
At least we got to experience the whole 80s. That's what I like. Yep, it's like,
Yeah, for
yes.
sure. Well, is that
Yep.
it?
Yes. Yep, that's it for the questions. So then
Okay.
we can pretty much look to wrap this up here in about 2 minutes or so. I'm going to get the quick plug here to the Viget application, or app. I keep calling everything fancy for full words here. Viget, Vigit. It's two separate words. It's on Android and Apple devices. It is a, it's basically fantasy betting. So basically jump on board with Apple and Android, like I said. So social media for sports bettors. You can post about your picks, see what others are saying about games. Viget Betting leads a month-long betting competition to see what the best sports bettor is over the course of a month. Free-to-play sportsbook, bet free coins, win real prizes. Betting stats, there's great information on the Viget Lifeline movement where the public is betting. Again, it is not real money wagering. It is just fantasy betting, but you can also use that, the Lifeline movement and all that. You can use that as a cheat sheet if you are actually betting too. So that's the cool part at the end of the day. Other than that, crypto.com, if you're interested, click on the link in the show description. It'll show that I referred you, and it will put $25 in your account and help this show and the other shows I do as well. With that said, I just want to, yep, I mean, obviously, Derek, this has been absolutely awesome. I really love doing these with you, and I'm sorry it's not more often. Obviously, my weird schedule and odd different schedules and such. So, hopefully, we'll be able to do this more often in the future.
Yeah, we'll have to try it like in the summer or something.
Yeah, I think maybe sometime and even.
For the end of school year, it all depends on how that goes. But yeah. No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And I've said this on other podcasts, no offense. But
No,
I'll
that's
say it
fine.
to you too, but thanks for giving fans a voice.
Yeah, yep.
Thanks for interacting with them and sharing those things, 'cause I realize that we have certain sports media, especially maybe a certain beat writer that kind of tends to dominate a lot of the conversation, but
Yeah, yep.
I think there's a lot of insight to be had from fans too. And you give them a chance to ask those questions and respond.
Yep.
It's not always just a discussion about where you get your meat at Kowalski's.
Yes,
So
I don't
I
hate
think they'll
that. Ugh.
appreciate that. So if they know where that means, then they understand where I'm coming from on that. So
Yes,
anyways, thanks a lot
yes.
for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yes, for sure. And I could go on all day about that. The whole people going on about their personal life crap. That's, oh my God. But no, absolutely. It's been a utter pleasure having you on the show. It's been a biggie. It's been a biggie, so I gotta put it together. Luckily, there isn't gonna be too much editing though. It's more just kind of putting it together. It's not like we stammered and we didn't have any. Yep. And your what is it? Pixel book? That worked out
Yeah.
awesome today. That worked out awesome. Yep. Neither of us got kicked off. This is a newer laptop as well. So, because my other one exploded in late June last year. So, everything worked out great. Thank you again. And we shall have you probably as soon as the summer, eh?
Sounds good.
All right.
For the draft or something.
For the draft. Yep, for sure. So, everybody, have a wonderful week. Hopefully, the Minnesota Wild can take care of business in the upcoming games. We didn't preview them because that's just, this was going to be a different show. We wanted to have a fun trade deadline show. Hope you don't mind. I'm sure you didn't. The end of the day.